to shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hello and welcome to Shoot the Defence on Kizway, brought to you by the FNX Network and My Sportswear. I'm your host, Stel, and this evening I've got three guests joining me. The first one, as you can see right here, is Jan making his long-awaited return. How are you doing, young man?
Not too bad, Stel. Thanks for having me on again. Much appreciated.
Great to have you on. So you're smiling again.
I am indeed. Talk about football. What else?
Lovely. Exactly. And our next two guests joining us all the way from, I called it Bonnie, Texas before. It's not a lot, like Bonnie Tyler, I guess. Mark Meredith, how you doing, mate? You good?
Yeah, all good, thank you. Having one of those weeks, one of those quiet weeks, really, after Thanksgiving's finished and then the build-up to Christmas. So it's been really slow, but we're getting there and we're just, doing as less practice as we can now, building up to the Christmas break.
Excellent. And also our third guest, Mr. Travis Newton. Long time no see, young man. How you doing?
Yeah, not bad, thank you. Not bad. I thought you were going to say I was living somewhere bonny for a minute. But, I'm not bad.
What, round the corner?
Well, not so much round the corner. In Essex now.
Oh, okay. Nice. You're not going to be in Towie anytime soon, are you?
No. I've no aspirations to be in Towie.
Good man. You have my utmost respect. Now, before I start, I'd just like to say a quick hello to Big Nose Himovic, who has joined us in the chat room. Love his support and really appreciate it, mate. Thank you very much. See? Love our fans. You've got to pay them some respect, do you know what I mean? Right, before we start the show, this guy right here, in case you guys didn't know, was my plus one at the Football Blog Awards a couple of weeks ago. And what did you make of the event?
Honestly?
Yeah.
A little bit fixed.
A little bit, just a tad.
Just a tad.
We're not bitter.
No, we're not bitter.
Not bitter
at all,
but
just a little bit.
Just a little bit of fix, yeah. But these things happen, my friend. But at least we played Hangman.
We did play Hangman.
At Old Trafford.
We did.
Never done that before?
No. Nope.
Don't think we'll ever do that again.
We had the table full to ourselves,
yeah,
didn't we?
We
played full of food.
Yeah, there was nine of us.
Yes.
And they brought nine dishes.
That's right.
And seven people didn't turn up, so you had two.
Yeah, and you stopped me having the third, didn't you?
There you go. Better pies than in Wigan, you say?
Absolutely.
Fantastic. See? Not just saying that because of Old Trafford, no.
No.
All right,
not being biased.
No, not biased at all.
No.
Right, we started the show in a jovial mood, but let's kick off with some terrible news, which broke this morning of a plane crash involving players from Brazilian club Chapecoense. 76 people have been confirmed dead, from when I started typing this, so I'm not sure if the list is lengthened. The club were travelling to play the biggest game in their career, and that was a Sudamericana match against Colombia's side Atlético Nacional. Now, the Sudamericana is a continental competition, is South America's answer to the Europa League. As far as I'm aware, the club's rise has been meteoric. You know, they started in Serie D in 2009, worked their way all the way up to Serie C, then back-to-back promotion to Serie A in 2014, and now 2016, embarking on the biggest game in their history, and this happens. Yanagi, I'll be the first to hold my hands up to say I hardly knew anything about this club, especially even before today, but there's no doubt one of the biggest tragedies in world football. What's your take on the situation?
It's a disaster, to be honest. I mean, I was watching them the other night against Palmeiras. I think they lost 1-0, and to hear this morning that, you know, they've gone to play the biggest game of their kind of careers, not to come back. I mean, they were Facebooking and Twittering an hour before
that, right,
having videos of, you know, we're going to play the biggest, yep, game of our careers, and to hear that is, you can't put words into
exactly
what's happened. So it's a massive disaster.
Absolutely. Mark, has there been much coverage in the United States about this, mate?
Yeah, I think so, Stel. You know, I think it's the tragedy's hit the world, really. You need to, it's a big thing for everybody. So I woke up to the news this morning, probably obviously after you guys, with it being the time difference. But everybody's talking about it, and everybody, like you say, is so shocked with this tragedy. And all we can do is have our thoughts and prayers to everybody involved. It's a difficult one because I think we take it for granted at times that, you know, week in, week out, teams, well, not just teams, but everybody are, you know, driving to away games and flying and things like that. And nobody really ever expects something like this to happen. So when it does, you know, you really sit back and think about it.
Absolutely. Travi, what's your take on the matter, mate?
Well, exactly what Mark said. Like, it's kind of a shock. And I was kind of thinking about it today and thinking, like, you know, that was the equivalent of like Liverpool going to the Europa League final last year. Mm-hmm. Like, and, you know, could you imagine if that had happened? You know, not that it makes it any more tragic or anything like that, but like just to kind of put it into that context is when it kind of really hits home for you. And yeah, you like Mark says, you kind of take for granted the fact that we kind of like fly around the world all the time, and you know, we never bat an eyelid at it, and then something like this happens, and it's horrible.
Mm, absolutely. Well, our prayers and thoughts are with the club and with the families and friends of all the players that have passed, and especially those who are injured as well. And let's just hope that something good and positive comes out of such a tragic moment. You know, I'm not very good at talking about tragedies or whatnot. Yeah. So I think let's move on to our Premier League review, shall we? And we'll start at the Liberty Stadium, where Swansea finally, or should I say Bob Bradley, finally got his first win as manager in a game that I can only describe as a farce, really. Travis, look, how relieved must Bob Bradley be at the moment? I mean, people question his appointment and, you know, so far the criticism was justified. But at the end of the day, you know, it's a big result at the weekend. And where can they go from now?
I mean, firstly, on the point of people questioning his, you know, like his ability to do the job, I think he's kind of got a bit of a thankless task there. Swansea are, you know, in a bad way, and you know, I think a part of that is kind of like our own ignorance over here in sort of like Europe, where we're like, right, okay, here's this American guy, you know, what does he know about football? And you know, he will be relieved in that they won. Unfortunately, I think for Swansea, this doesn't necessarily mean that they turn the corner. Like, I think they've just beaten a really bad Crystal Palace side, mm-hmm. and managed to concede four goals against a really bad Crystal Palace side. So there's still a lot of work to be done. But yeah, he'll be relieved. Hopefully, you know, hopefully he can you know, turn it around. I say hopefully. I don't actually hope he can turn it around, because they're one of West Ham's direct rivals. So they struggle, great. But yeah, you know, for the sake of another human being doing well, then yeah, hopefully Bob Bradley can turn it around, and hopefully Swansea kind of sort their act out, because a few years ago everybody was kind of hailing them as a kind of like one of the modern clubs to follow, and they've kind of lost their way a bit now.
I agree. Now, Maggie, listen, call me a snob, but I think 9 goals in the Premier League game is totally unacceptable. Look, I know people want to be entertained, and it's great. It's a great advert to the Premier League. But if you're the manager if you're manager of both of the clubs, you must be absolutely livid.
Yeah, defensively wasn't great, was it, to be fair? I mean, as an entertainment point of view, it was fantastic to watch. Lucky enough, I had the satellite, and I watched it live. So to watch a game like that was actually quite lucky. It was a topsy-turvy game. 1 minute, you know, Swansea are 3-1 up. Then Palace get a goal back. Swansea get nervous. They go ahead, and you're thinking Swansea are not going to come back. And then 2 goals in the last minute, win the game. So, brilliant game to watch, though.
For a neutral. But my point is, if you are serious about maintaining your Premier League survival and you stay in the league, you can't be conceding 5 goals a game. You can't be conceding 4 goals a game. I mean, Swansea played United before and conceded 3. That's right. Effectively, they conceded 7 goals in 2 games. That's unacceptable.
Yeah, they won't stay up conceding goals like that week in, week out. So Bob Bradley's got to get that right from a defensive point of view. The plus side for Swansea, they scored 5 goals, so at least they've got it right on that aspect. As for Palace, was it 7 on the bounce now that they've lost?
Yes, it's incredible. That's
worrying. That's relegation form there. And you know, when Pardew came in, ex-Palace man, you thought he came in initially, did well, got them to the cup final. It seemed to have all gone kind of downhill since then. Mm. So I don't know how much time he's got.
Yeah, the interesting thing about this is that when Pardew came in, they had a fantastic run of form. You know, winning games here and there. He got a lot out of, you know, Wilf Zaha, made him a fantastic player. You know, Bolasie was outstanding. You know, even Conor Wickham was scoring. Yeah. Shamak was getting one or two here and there, you know. And
Punchin was doing well. Punchin,
exactly.
Well.
But now it just seems that, you know, the players have regressed. You know, Andros Townsend doesn't look like the same player that he was at Newcastle.
It was good the other day, wasn't it?
Exactly.
Well.
You know, Hennessy, he's not playing much. Mandanda took his place. Dunn, you know, had the chance of being in the England squad. And it's just gone downhill for all these players. Ezekiel Fryers, remember him?
Yeah.
Was he United?
He was at United.
Went to Spurs. Right. And they made a big fuss about him being one of the next best.
He doesn't get into the Palace team, does he?
He played at the weekend, didn't he? He had a bloody nightmare.
He did.
Yeah, exactly. Mark, I bet they loved watching this in Trumpland. What did the Americans make of Bob Bradley's win?
I think everybody's smiling about it, Stow, you know. over here, the Premier League is the biggest world. The biggest league in the world. Undoubtedly, you know, everybody gets up early in the morning on a Saturday and Sunday to watch the games, and to have somebody who's an American over there and the first one is always going to be good for him, and it's always going to grab people's attention and people watching Swansea just because of that. So it was a great game to watch. Moving on to what you were talking about, though, Stow, you know, it's a difficult one for a coach, really, on something like that, because as you say, you'd be angry at a defensive way of conceding four goals, you know, but you'd also be happy that your side has really dug deep and, you know, scored two late on to win the game. So it's always a hard job for us on the side. I can totally understand the anger, but I can also understand the excitement of winning a game like that. When I was a boy, I remember watching Birmingham play against Swindon at St Andrews, and we were 4-1 up with about 30 minutes to go, and we lost the game 5-4. Glenn Hoddle scored a hat-trick that day for Swindon and was outstanding, but I remember standing on the terraces and thinking, what went wrong there? You know, 4-1 up and cruising and lose the game. But if you can imagine being a Swindon Town fan that day, or a Swindon Town player, and seeing that they went and scored, you know, four late goals and won the game 5-4, it's a totally different reaction to the game.
Absolutely. And Big Nose Himovic in the chat says, Swansea's problems go back some time. Their recruitment in recent years has been poor. Their possession ethos seems to have gone to pits or pots. That way, which you want to see. No, he's right. He's absolutely right. I mean, I remember we spoke in length about Ashley Williams, how important he was to the club. Now, not just as a captain, but as a presence, you know, physical, strong, quick. You know, even Rangel looked like a half-decent defender alongside him. But, you know, players like Wayne Routledge, you thought, you know, he's got pace. Moreno, pace. Montero, sorry, he's got loads of pace. They're just not doing it. I think
Sigurdsson's the only one that's really
Sigurdsson. That's right. Yeah, Leroy Fer's a decent player. Yeah. To be fair,
6 goals this season.
That's right. And Llorente seems to be, you know, right now he's in form at the moment. But Travis, when you look at this Sunderland squad in comparison to your boys West Ham, are you a bit concerned that they might end up overtaking? I mean, January is coming. Bob Bradley has got a bit of experience. You know, knows some players in Ligue 2 and Egypt, or am I just being really patronising?
If I look at Swansea, if I'm being honest, yes, there's the odd player there, like you mentioned, Sigurdsson. I rate Llorente. I'm a big fan of Athletic Bilbao, so I remember him back there. And also, like, I know he didn't have as big of an impact at Sevilla, but like I know he went to Juventus and he did really well over there as well, as like, kind of like an impact sub. So they do have individuals that I'd be wary of, but I can't see. I don't think Swansea are going to be the worry for me. I reckon we can finish above Swansea. The only problem is I think that, you know, potentially finishing above Swansea doesn't necessarily mean you'll finish in the top 17 spots in the league.
No, I agree.
So let's see what happens there. But yeah, I mean, you know, they may strengthen in the January transfer window. It'd be quite interesting to see what sort of player Bradley goes for. Because, like you say, like he has experience in Ligue 2, he has experience in Egypt, but like I can't imagine he's going to bring it over. Well, he may well bring some people over from those leagues, I don't know. But I can't imagine he will do it, so you know, it'd be interesting to see.
I bet he brings his son back.
I was just about to say, you never know, it might be Michael alone.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me, you know, defensive midfielder with Leon Britton, you never know, you never know. Gents, we spoke about Alan Pardew briefly earlier. He's got a bit of previous when it comes to losing streaks, hasn't he? I mean, will the board look at his spending and gauge that as maybe, you know, whether they should keep him or not? I don't understand. I mean, you know him as well as I do, Travi, from his time as manager at West Ham. Can you see him lasting the pace at Crystal Palace?
I think he's a goner, if I'm being honest. The problem is everybody keeps, you know, homing in on the fact that they've got the worst record in 2016 and you know, that kind of, I can't imagine that the board's looking at that and looking at how much money they spent in the summer. And, you know, was it 32 million they spent on Benteke?
That's right. Yeah.
And, you know, and the position they're in now, I think nowadays, especially, you know, like the Premier League is so results driven and, you know, he's already under pressure. I think that I know there's talk of him having two games to save himself, because I think they've got Hull and somebody else coming up. And yeah, if they don't win, I'd say they need 4 points from those two games. Mm. I really do. If they don't get at least 4 points from those two games, I think he could be a goner. Mm. Personally, it's something that people keep highlighting, the fact that he kind of has these runs where he goes on a slump. And he did at West Ham as well. His downfall at West Ham was, I know there was some other things off the field that were also caused his downfall. But his downfall at West Ham was largely a slump after we'd signed Tevez and Mascherano, where we basically just couldn't reverse it. Mm. And I can just see the same happening again. And obviously the same happened at Newcastle as well. So he's got previous.
Mm, absolutely. And Mark, see, this is the thing about football. You know, Alan Pardew came in, you got the new manager bounce, he got the best out of, like I've mentioned before, Bellassi, Zaha, he brought in Kabai, was absolutely outstanding. The board gave him money, he brought in Benteke, he brought in Townsend, he effectively strengthened the squad. I mean, they lost Bellassi, but how big of a player has Bellassi been then for them to be such a slump? I mean, even Connor Wickham now looks like one of their best players. Last season they had Wickham, Gale, Shamak and a couple of others up front, and they weren't getting goals. Adebayor was there for a bit. They weren't getting goals. Benteke comes in, he's scoring goals, but they're not doing well. So why do you think they've gone backwards instead of going forward?
It's a difficult one, Stow. You know, like we just talked about, Alan Pardew has got history in this. And, you know, it always seems that when a new manager comes in, there's always a bit of excitement around the camp, and people step up and play their hardest to get noticed. But then I think sometimes if you don't continue to give that excitement around the place and change things, that people just start getting too comfortable again and go back into, not really trying their best for the boss and not really having the full respect for him like they had before. I'm really shocked that he's actually still in charge after Saturday's game. And I just feel that, you know, I read in the news yesterday that Tony Pulis is going to have to pay Palace £3.7 million back in compensation for when he left. So, will that money be used to pay Pardew off and try and bring somebody else in? But, you know, we see it all the time. The new manager comes in and really does something good. But then, unfortunately for him, time and time again, as we said and as Travis just said, is history of him being good to start with and then failing as the time goes on.
Mm, absolutely.
I fancy Big Sam there.
Big Sam? Mm. Yeah?
I really do.
Interesting. That could be a good one, actually. Interesting, yeah. Right, speaking of entertainment, Jose Mourinho's antics overshadowed another frustrating game for Manchester United as they were held 1-1 by Travis West Ham. Trav, big improvement from recent results for the Iron, or were you a little disappointed not to come away with 3 points? You had that chance at the end with Fletcher.
Do you know what? I've still not seen this game. This is one of the few games on the weekend I didn't actually see, despite it being my own team. I was delighted with the result on paper. I've heard we had a big chance. I've seen the goals. Terrible marking for your equaliser.
Terrible marking for the first, to be fair.
Great ball by Pogba.
Sorry?
It was terrible marking for the opener, to be fair.
Actually, you could level that at both sides, yeah. Especially in the first minute of a game. But I'm delighted with it. To be honest with you, I had that down as us getting beaten by United. We, with the exception of last season, we always, no matter how badly United play, we always lose at Old Trafford in the league, always. And to go there again and get a point, for me, that's a big plus. I'm hoping we can kind of kick on from that. We've had this already this season, though. You know, we beat Chelsea in the League Cup, and we had a couple of good results around then. And then, obviously, we chucked the Tottenham game away the other day. So it's kind of, I'm really not sure what to trust at the moment. Touch wood, it means that this is a change. But, you know, I don't know. And the problem we have is that we've obviously got Arsenal on the weekend, and then we've got Liverpool following on from that, I think. So, by the sort of in a couple of weeks' time, we could be in an even worse position.
It's a fair point. Now, Jan, United are creating chances at home, but they're not putting them away, unfortunately. Now, does Mourinho have to change anything tactically, or do we just keep faith in the front line?
I just think if Zlatan doesn't score, United don't seem to score. at the moment. It seems like a lot of players from last year that had good seasons. Martial, we started, hardly seen him this year, hardly kind of featured, and when it has, he hasn't done it. Rashford, wide left, he did a lot of damage up front. Maybe we can start playing him up front instead of wide left. It can cause a lot of teams problems. I just think we're creating chances. That's the positive thing. And the performances have been a lot better than you know, last 3 years.
Mm.
It's just the results have been really unfortunate.
Mm.
But from United's perspective, we need to... Biased United. We need to start winning our home games. You can't draw against Stoke.
Are you happy with the football, though?
I am.
Yeah?
Compared to the last 2-3 years, yeah, it's improving. You can see Mourinho starting to get his ideas across. It's just unfortunate draws. You know, if you win them 1-0 or you win them 2-1, you know, it's not the fuss. It's the fact that we're drawing the games and not winning the games that's causing all the havoc with Mourinho and so forth.
Tell me something, and I'm going to put this question to you two as well, Mark and Trav. I've got a bee in my bonnet about Jesse Lingard. Personally, you see me on Twitter. I've got my opinions on him. Yeah. I don't rate him. I don't think he should be anywhere near the reserves, let alone the first team. You know, he shouldn't even be making tea. This is the kind of player that spends more time dancing than anything, right? He should be joining the Crystal Palace cheerleaders, as far as I'm concerned, right? And then you've got Rashford. Okay, look, I know it's going to sound really harsh of me to slate the kid because he's only 18, but then when I look at him, say, compared to someone like Iheanacho, same age, same position, you know, Iheanacho scoring goals left, right and centre, you know, Rashford has only got 1 foot. He's a one-dimensional player and he needs to change his game. I'm not saying get rid of him, you know, because I was really critical of him yesterday. I lost my rag on Twitter and I should start really deleting these tweets because I look back in like a year's time and look absolutely stupid. But, you know, what's going on with this kid? Is he... I mean, I know that he can't play a full 90 minutes. That's why Mourinho usually takes him off with 10 to go, you know, 12 to go, whatever. Mark, when you look at a youngster like that and you've coached someone like Damari Gray, how do you wrap this kid in cotton wool but still get the best out of him?
It's really difficult, Stal. It's a difficult job, you know, just to... firstly, he bounced onto the scene in the Champions League with goals and you know, going on to play for England and scoring as well. So he had a really exciting and good start to his so-called career. So did that, you know, put him too big for his boots, as they say, and just give him a little, blow a bit more smoke up him when, you know, he wasn't really that ready to be playing first team football every week in, week out. So it's all, you know, I rate him, you know, I disagree I don't think he's a good player. I think when he's played for England, he's give a bit of excitement to the team. Don't get me wrong, I don't watch him week in, week out for United. I don't catch up on the whole games. But from what I've seen personally, I think that he can do a job. But is that something that he can be the main striker? You know, or he's playing at the minute in that three up top with Zoltan and with Jesse Lingard as well. So it's difficult. Mourinho obviously sees something in him and he's going to try his best at a young age to keep him away from the press and to keep him away from everything and make him improve week in, week out. But as you say, you know, we've always said to our boys, just go out and enjoy every minute. Go out and play to the, you know, your best of your potential every game.
Mm-hmm.
We know that at 18 years of age, there's going to be difficult times. And you know, there's got to be a lot of patience with these boys as well. They're still only young boys. They're still... only used to playing probably youth football for, you know, 7, 8, 9 years. So to be thrown in front of thousands and thousands of people and in front of the world, really, in the Premier League stage can be a terrifying thing for them. And I think sometimes us looking at it as supporters don't see that.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Big Nose in the chat room says, is the Europa a hindrance? I think United have a big enough squad, but Mourinho isn't using them at all. What do you reckon?
I think it's our best chance of getting into the Champions League next year, now the Europa, the way that kind of things are materialising in the league. We're 8 points behind fourth spot.
Mm.
I think it's probably going to be our biggest focus now. You know, we're going to Ukraine. We need a point to qualify. If we get it, by all means, go and win it.
But if we don't, then we're out and then we can focus on the league because there's no Thursday, Sunday.
Can we catch up?
Why not? I mean, how many games have been played? 13, 14?
There's still plenty of games to go.
Tottenham next weekend, Everton away this weekend. You know,
difficult games coming up.
With regards to the squad, this is what I see.
Okay.
Mourinho doesn't have his best 11 because he's working with rubbish, right? You know when, you know, when you're at school and then they say, go and play in the corner, go play with the Play-Doh, right? And then all the Play-Doh that's there, it's all mushed together. So a yellow Play-Doh is with a red Play-Doh and it's like orange and you're like, what the hell is this? You're working with this. That's what Mourinho's got. He's got rubbish like Jones, Rojo, Darmian. I keep saying this, an Italian defender that doesn't know how to defend. How is that even possible?
Or cross a ball.
This is serious.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I'm not even joking. And then you look at Schneiderlin, okay? It's not the guy's fault that he'd be brought in with a big price tag. But in the day, there's got to be a reason why he's not being played, okay? Perhaps Mourinho doesn't like his attitude. Perhaps he doesn't like his physicality. Perhaps he's just not really that good. Let's face it, you know, Mourinho plays a certain way. We all know this. And people say he pops the bus. Well, 90-odd shots in the past three games kind of like, you know, dismantles that myth, you know. But this is what I'm trying to say. When you look at what he's having to work with, he needs at least another two more transfer windows. Yeah. I mean, they're talking about possibly Ovi Mikel coming in.
I know.
I mean, that's how serious things are. This is the way I see it. You've got to have a spine, a decent spine. We don't have that at the moment. De Gea, good goalkeeper. I think he's regressed a little bit, to be fair. Eric Bailly, injured. Right? You know, Pogba, you know, he needs a bit of time. We need someone like a Carrick. We need Carrick, but we need a younger Carrick. You know, there's no use talking about Schweinsteiger because he's going to leave in a few weeks' time anyway. He's going to go when the transfer window opens. And then up front, you've got a 35-year-old. Well, what are you going to do? You know, so he needs time. He needs to adjust. And to be fair, I want the Europa League, yes, as a United fan. I want the Europa League. Why not? It's a competition. I mean, Mourinho has got a chance of winning four trophies. So how is he failing? He's in every tournament. He's in every competition, possible.
Yeah.
So how's he failing? Guys, what do you reckon? I don't want to keep going on about United this evening, but what do you guys reckon about what Big Nose asked?
I think, Stel, it's a sign of the times. It's like you said, with the team they have at the minute, the squad they have, because, you know, 5-6 years ago, the United were rushing through the Champions League, the FA Cup, the League Cup, the Premier League, and they were flying, and nobody ever talked about how many games they had to play. You know, they were atop at every league. They were favourites to win every cup. And now I think, you know, a couple of seasons of struggling as they, you know, and not being as strong as they used to be has really caught up with them. And it's caught up with the squad and the management and everything they have. And this is why people are now saying, you know, we can't play these Europa League. Who would ever have thought as a Man United fan that you'd be saying you don't want to be in the Europa League after year and year in the Champions League and getting to the, you know, the last 16, the semis, and even going to win the Champions League in the treble season.
Yeah.
It's a real difficult one for you guys to do that. Now, personally, I think the Europa League is a good chance for you to win a trophy this year. I think you could be the only one. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think they need a push and continue to go on and win that tournament if they can, because that's the only real way of getting into the Champions League for next year.
Mm. Just a couple of quick things before we move on, because, like I said, I don't keep talking about United tonight. But first of all, as a United fan, we have been spoiled in the past 20 to 25 years, okay? So this slump, we need to take it on the chin and just deal with it. Suck it up, okay? We're in the Europa League, okay? So what? People don't want to be in it. Big deal. Ask Sevilla what they think of the Europa League. I think they won it, what, 3 years on the
round? 3 years on the trot.
So, you know, you can't turn your nose up at it any day. And don't forget, English teams weren't in Europe 25, 30 years ago. You know, so we need to count ourselves lucky that we're not in a situation where we're banned from Europe, not getting European League football, European football, and just enjoy it at the end of the day. You know, Trav, I bet you're a bit upset that West Ham aren't in the Europa League. They didn't take it serious.
100%, mate, 100%. I had a big rant on Twitter when we got knocked out again by the same bunch of the same guys from Romania. And, you know, I really can't stand this whole snobbery that there is in this country about the Europa League. And, like, people are like, oh, Thursday, Sunday. They're happy to play Wednesday, Saturday, but Thursday, Sunday is a problem.
Mm.
And it's like, I don't know. Like, personally, I wish we'd have taken the Europa League seriously last year, because I think that what would have happened is if we'd have had the... I mean, obviously, it might have affected the season that we had last year, but if we'd have had the season that we had last year and been in Europe, we would have been able to attract better players in the summer window rather than come out and say that we're going to attract all these names but actually realise that none of them are interested in us because we've got absolutely no pedigree outside of the United Kingdom and barely any within the United Kingdom as well. So, like, that for me, I think the Europa League is a stepping stone. And like you should approach it in the way that Tottenham have approached the Europa League. And I'm not saying that they've taken it, as seriously as, say, Sevilla have, but at the same time, they've done fairly well in it. So then you see Tottenham and they can sign people like Christian Eriksen and Eric Lamela, because the likes of Christian Eriksen and Eric Lamela have heard of Tottenham Hotspur,
yep.
Whereas they've probably not heard of West Ham, which is why, like I said, we're talking about signing Lacazette in the summer.
Mm.
Why would he leave Lyon, who are in the Champions League, to play for a side that can't get past the team in the Europa League qualifiers and can't get past the same team 2 years running?
That's a fair point.
Well,
fair
Liverpool point. Got to the final last year, didn't they?
Yeah, that's right.
Middlesbrough did as well.
That's
2 years back. And
yep.
Chelsea beat Benfica.
You should take it more seriously in this country.
I take it more seriously.
You know, Liverpool got to the final last year, you're right. But, you know, a lot of people turn their nose up at it. And that's, I think, right. Like you say, it's a great opportunity for United to win a trophy this year. And a decent trophy at that. So I think you guys should go for it.
Because if Liverpool would have won it last year, they would have been in the Champions League this year. So it's an incentive to go and win it as well.
Mm. Spot on. Well, Trav, your boys face United midweek in the... what's it called? The English League Cup?
I still call it the Worthington Cup. Or the
Carling Cup. The Rumbelows Cup.
That's it.
Yeah, exactly. So, you got United midweek, you got Arsenal at the weekend. Will a win and a draw save Bilic or prolong his career at the club? Or is he safe regardless?
I hope so. I hope it does. I really like him. I don't know. Football is so hard to predict nowadays. Like I was saying earlier on with Pardew, boards are just not that patient anymore.
Mm.
And I mean, I think if we were to lose our next three games, which I think it United tomorrow, Arsenal Saturday, and I think we've got Liverpool after that.
Yeah.
If we were to lose those three games, personally, I wouldn't want to get rid of Bilic, because I think you've got to take some context into it and look at the teams that you're playing. But that being said, that this is modern day football. As I said, I hope we do hang on to him, because I think he is a good manager. Yes, we have signed some of his players in the summer and it hasn't worked out. Gökhan Tor is awful, and he pushed for Gökhan Tor to come to you at West Ham last January, and that didn't happen, thank God. Barring the odd signing here and there, I think he's a good manager and he always speaks really well. You see them, in the European Championships when he was a pundit.
Yeah.
I love listening to him speak. You can tell he's a really good man motivator as well. So personally, I want to hold on to him, but I can't say that other West Ham fans feel the same, or that the board do.
Absolutely. Well, look, I know you probably won't like me reminding you of this, but West Ham hold the record for the most points in a relegation season at 42. Now, they said that back then that squad was too good to go down, with your Di Canios, your Defoes, your David Jameses, Christian Dailies even. are you concerned? Because they're saying the same thing about this lot.
This lot aren't anywhere near as good as that team. I'm very concerned. Do you know why I'm concerned? It's because everybody's as mediocre as each other this year. They're all it's like watching a load of guys covered in gunk in one of those game shows as a kid, when they're all falling over each other and trying to get up. And you look at it, Sunderland were awful, and all of a sudden they're a couple of points behind us. Swansea were awful, they've caught up with us. Hull are a point behind us. Leicester are terrible this year. I keep looking at the table and thinking, we win one game and we could jump up to about 11th, but we're just not doing it. And, I'm really worried. And like I said, that team that went down, obviously completely different circumstances, but, it still almost brings a tear to my eye when I look at some of the players we had. We had Michael Carrick, Joe Cole, Glenn Johnson, David James, as you say, Di Canio. That was a great side. Trevor Sinclair, Jermaine Defoe. And we don't have that quality throughout our squad at the moment. We've got some good players, don't get me wrong, but we don't have that quality throughout the squad. And I'm worried that we could end up finding ourselves in a real battle and struggling.
Mark, do you feel a bit guilty because it was your Birmingham seat that sent them down on the final day?
I remember.
It's a last minute goal as well from Stern John. So it was smiles on the home end, and I remember it's tears in the away one. But we all know that it's over the season, that that, you know, we could pick up those little wins or get a point somewhere where we think we should. And we've been a yo-yo club for so many years at Birmingham, so I've experienced it, you know, that we've been on our highs. We went and won the Carling Cup against Arsenal and won, you know, the best thing in history for us, nearly, and then get relegated, only needing one win from the last 10 games and not getting it and getting relegated on the same season, and then spending our Europa League season in the Championship. So it's difficult. That, you know, we look back and that's probably the best squad we had, with Ben Foster and Stephen Carr and, you know, Zigic and Martins and people like that that went on and won the trophy for us and then got relegated, and then
Mark, from
they haven't really done anything.
Mark, just to add more weight to it. So you that season you guys won the Carling Cup or whatever it was, but you knocked us out in the semi, and we got relegated as well. Could have been worse.
It's always somebody worse.
Well, you probably don't know this, Mark, but Travis has a Christophe Dugarry voodoo doll.
Gary.
But he didn't hear that from me. Right, Chelsea ended Tottenham's unbeaten run with a 2-1 victory, and Man City replicated that result against Burnley, which sets up the encounter between the two Blues at the weekend very nicely. Mark, Chelsea have only conceded one in their last seven games, and that's a seven-game winning streak. City, on the other hand, were a little lucky to come away with a win at the weekend. How do you see this one going?
Chelsea, for me, I think, style now, which is difficult to say because, you know, a month ago, I was banking on City to win the league. I even said on this show probably 5 or 6 weeks ago that Man City could go the whole season without getting beaten. And then the week after, I know they went and got beat, and then they've been struggling for the last, you know, 4 weeks or 5 weeks. But Chelsea are just looking, going from strength to strength this year. You know, Conte's doing a great job there. He's getting the best out of players that we haven't really have noticed over the last couple of seasons, of Victor Moses and people like that. So I think Chelsea, and I'm going to say it, I think Chelsea could be now the favourites to go on and win the title.
You've just jinxed them. Well done.
Yeah.
Trav Coutinho, as Phil, as they know him now, first name basis. Yeah. He picked up an injury in Liverpool's 2-0 win against Southampton. That's put him out of action for about 5 weeks. Will Liverpool miss him much, though?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, don't get me wrong. I really like Firmino, and Mane's been good. You know, they've got a good side, and they don't have European football like Chelsea, which is why I think they're flying this year. But yeah, they'll definitely miss Coutinho. Maybe not as much as they did, or they would have had it been last season, or even last season, I think it was, because last season at this point they had Coutinho was their man last year. But then you had Firmino kind of trying to bed himself in. They didn't have Mane. They didn't have, but Lallana wasn't playing in the same sort of system that they're playing now, and, you know, they weren't getting the best out of him. So I think they will miss him, but at the same time, they won't miss him in the way that they may have missed him 12 months ago. But yeah, great player, though.
Mm, absolutely. And you, don't say it too loud.
I'll try not to.
Keep it quiet. But Arsenal are winning games, they're winning ugly, they're scraping results. In fact, they haven't done that since Sophie Ellis-Bextor had the number one hit back in 2004.
Has it been that long?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Are they going to win the league, or is this going to be another trophy-less season for the Wenger boys?
They've got a chance this year. I think with Arsenal, there's always been the consistency that's always kind of shadowed them. But I think Wenger's made a few kind of tactical changes this year that seem to have worked. Alexis playing up front. Seems to have had, you know, got the best out of him this year, scoring goals. Walcott, it's been a revelation, you know, playing on the right wing this year as well. And they're picking up results where other years, I mean, even Bournemouth Sunday, they weren't great, managed to win 3-1.
But that's how you win titles, isn't it?
That's how you win titles. Yeah. And like I said, with Arsenal, the question is maybe kind of February, March, where the kind of wheels come off every year, seems to be with them. If they get a decent Champions League draw, maybe go through, confidence build, stay injury free. Even in the transfer window, if they can get maybe another centre midfielder,
I don't think they'll do it though. I don't think they will, because no. I mean, we saw with Newcastle where they got Faustino Espirito to win the league, and we saw how that went. But I don't think Wenger will invest, because he's still got Welbeck to come back. He's still got, you know, Coquelin to be 100% fit. You know, Elneny's doing well, Xhaka's doing well. You know, okay, the only worry is Bellerin, really, yeah. But they've got adequate cover there in Jenkinson and who's the French fullback, Debuchy.
He's injured at the moment.
He's injured. Who started at right back? Was it Gabriel who fitted it? Started at right back at the weekend. Didn't he come on? Gabriel came on.
Yeah,
so,
right.
You know, Ozil isn't getting the assists in open play, but he's scoring more.
Goals.
Giroud is just this impact striker, which, you know, a lot of people... Do you remember last season? I think he went like 12 games without scoring, and they were saying, get rid of him, he's rubbish. And next thing you know, boom, you know, I think it's the beard. Must be the beard, you know. And Sanchez is doing so well, I think, because his dogs are happy. I think that might be why he's...
Have you seen his substitutions this year? Maybe other years, you know, Chamberlain comes on at Old Trafford, puts the ball in, Giroud off the bench, they get a point. Again, playing ugly, one shot on target, 1 point, they leave happy.
Yeah.
It seems to kind of be clicking for Arsenal at the moment, which is good for them.
But he continues to prove their fans wrong. Beginning of the season, oh, you've got to sign this, sign players, sign this, sign that. He made a couple of signings in Mustafi and Perez, and it was underwhelming for their fans. But hang about, they're in with a shout of winning the title. They haven't lost the game in, like, since the beginning of the season, have they? They haven't lost a game since opening day.
That's right.
Since they lost at Liverpool. So you can't not take them serious. You know, there's a chance of them even topping the Champions League. Okay, fair enough, Paris are at the shadow and will probably beat the Reds. But, you know, if they come second, who they maybe face? Dortmund?
Atletico
Madrid,
Barcelona.
And listen, I'm not even trying to, you know,
Barcelona.
I'm not even taking them exactly. I'm not even taking them. They have a chance.
Yep.
They have a chance. You cannot not take them serious. So, you know, watch this space. Watch this space. Anyway, in other news,
was that too loud?
No, that's fine. In other news, unfortunately, more doom and gloom in the football world. I'm afraid more than 20 ex-footballers have made allegations of sex abuse. Some of whom have waived their right to anonymity to create awareness. Now, Andy Woodward was the first to speak out about the abuse he suffered as a youngster at the club by a convicted paedophile and crew coach, Barry Bennell. Now, Mark, you coach youngsters, so what's the first thing you thought when the news broke, and how have parents reacted to this?
It's a really difficult one, Style. You know, it's something that nobody ever wants to really think about, both as a professional coach and also as a parent. You know, you don't send your kids off to play football and risk that the coach is going to be abusing them in any way. So, It's a difficult question to talk about, but you know, they have the normal child protection courses that people have to go on and background checks and things like that. But the problem is that how do you stop these paedophiles from getting in?
Yeah.
You know, we can have background checks every year and can come back clear. But that doesn't mean that you're not going to be in a situation where you do, you know, abuse somebody behind closed doors and nobody's ever going to know about it. So, you know, it's something that I hate to say, but could go on in any place, you know, in a school, in a football environment or any environment. And people don't know until they get, you know, either caught or... like we do now, people are speaking out about it.
Absolutely. Now, as you know, a mutual friend of ours, Paul Devlin, he tweeted the other day that when he was playing as a youngster, he heard a few rumours about something like this happening at Crewe. I mean, how many more clubs do you think will hit the headlines for this?
I think, you know, there's been over the years, there was one at West Brom a couple of years ago and the coach got arrested for that and was put in prison. There was the kit man at Coventry just... a couple of months ago, who was in the newspaper for the same thing, and he was facing a jail term. So, you know, it comes out never as big as it's come out now with all these players coming forward. But it comes out in everyday life, and I'm sure now after, you know, 20 or so players have spoken out, if there is any other ones, they're going to speak out now and sell their stories.
Absolutely. And Travis, Crewe are infamous for producing, or should I say famous for producing some outstanding players over the years, but has this news kind of tarnished their reputation?
I don't know. I mean, it's horrible news. Horrible news. I'm not sure. I mean, obviously, as you say, like, you know, some of the great players, like the Ian Rushes. Was Michael Owen in the Crewe at one point as well?
It was Robbie Savage, it was Danny Murphy, Neil Lennon. David Platt.
Of course, David Platt, yeah, that's a big one. But, yeah, I mean, I think obviously it will kind of tarnish, you know, whenever people look back at the players they've produced in the past, there'll kind of be that kind of undertone in the background that you can't kind of get away from, which is horrible to have. But then I think when you say tarnish their reputation, in terms of sort of going forward, I don't know really, because football has changed so much in that, you know, people don't, many youngsters probably wouldn't nowadays, probably wouldn't even think of going to, regardless of this story, wouldn't think of going to Crewe. They'd probably want to sign themselves up in the Man City's academy or Chelsea's or something like that and expect to become a professional via that route. So I don't know, but yeah, I mean, sort of, yeah, people won't be able to look back as fondly at that crop of players or the players that have been produced by Crewe in the past and kind of not think of these stories as well.
That's right. And I'll tell you what, Big Nose has come out with a really good point. The attitude, the likes of Eric Bristow, is probably why people were reluctant to come out.
That's right.
I mean, that's disgusting, if I'm being honest. Somebody showed me that tweet today, and like, it just is like beggars belief, really, isn't it? Like,
He went off on a tangent though, didn't he? I mean, he was using about four or five tweets going off one. I'm thinking, okay, he hasn't been hacked for a start. Yeah. Don't give me that he's been hacked. I mean, this is just, you know, an archaic, ignorant, you know, Philistine, basically. He just hasn't got a clue about the 21st century. He's just living in the, you know, in the dark ages. And he's an MBE as well. I mean, what kind of message does that send out?
I mean, personally, I think he's just seeking attention. When was the last time Eric Bristow did anything relevant?
There you go.
Sky Sports sacked him today, didn't they?
They sacked him. Was he actually even on?
Yeah, it was on the Darts channel.
Fair enough.
Almost free.
Yeah. There you go. Anyway, 16 and a half years ago, Diego Simeone scored the winner for Lazio as they beat Juventus. They actually went on to win the title by a point that season. Now, Genoa probably won't win Serie A this season, but history sort of repeated itself as his son Giovanni bagged the 13-minute brace against Juve in their 3-1 victory. You, mate, know a bit thing about Serie A. Great story, isn't it? One where his dad will be absolutely proud of.
Knowing Simeone, well, not personally, probably still celebrating, you know, the touchline or something like that with his antics, but it's a brilliant story, especially for kind of Genoa to beat Juventus as well. I know Juventus have got a few injury problems at the moment, but for Simeone to get two goals, Junior, fantastic story.
Yeah, you know? And I think the Genoa manager before the game said to his players, you choose the way you want to die against Juventus.
That's right. it's brilliant, you know, motivation and... they've gone out and did the business. 3-0 up at half time, so kind of game was over in the first half. So,
Absolutely.
Big result for Genoa yesterday.
Exactly, but Travi, no Dybala, no Chiellini, Barzagli. They may have been injured, but that loss has surely given the chasing pack some hope at least.
I don't know. I mean, I watched it. It was a great game, and I don't know if you saw it, but he almost at one point it looked like he was on for the hat trick. Third goal, he actually whacks as it kind of is already over the line, and I'm quite impressed by Simeone's son, because he scored with his first touch.
That's right, the ever. Minute, yeah.
He scored with his first touch, and then he scored in his debut with his first touch. Then he scored in his second game as well, and he's got like a few like already in a very short amount of games. So like, yeah, pretty impressed by him. But yeah, I watched it, and Juve, as you say, like had a few injuries. Bonucci limped off in the middle of the game, they were kind of all over the place from literally from minute one. But at the same time, like the chasing pack, the problem is that Juve are still streets ahead of the chasing pack, and it obviously hasn't helped that they signed Higuain and Pjanic. Pjanic is great free kick as well this game. The ball went back for him. It hasn't helped that they signed them in the summer. But the guys, I mean, Roma are too inconsistent. Roma kind of have a few games where they look like they're doing the business, and they remind me of Arsenal a little bit. Like you watch Roma on their day, and you think, oh, they've got to be challenging for the title, and then you just see them crumble, away to somebody silly. And then Milan, I've been really impressed by Milan this season. I watched them on Saturday night against Empoli. It was a quite big win, but actually they were quite fortunate. Empoli pushed them quite hard. and they've got that in them. Like Juventus lost to Milan a couple of weeks ago, and then Milan went and lost to Genoa off the back of it, and Inter beat Juventus before that, and you know, and the others slipped up just after. So you know, there's a reason why Juventus are 4 points clear, even despite this weekend's results. So I personally think, you know, it just means that the race might last until April.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. I mean, look, Atalanta got another win. Roma in amongst the crowd. Even Inter, that's a big win against Fiorentina. Yeah. Pioli is already starting to work his magic.
Lazio as well, exactly.
Lazio
are a surprise team for me this year, I think. they kind of, after last year, they're terrible. But this year, they've kind of got their act together.
The son of Mobile and seems to be scoring goals.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, speaking of his son Giovanni Simeone, have you Googled him recently and gone to Google Images?
Are they talking about his haircut?
His haircut at at River Plate. I'm going to just put this on the...
I have seen that. Yeah, isn't it the one that where it's kind of like a shaved ponytail? Like he's shaved everything bar...
The sides. So it's like an old man's hairstyle, you know what I mean? Bit strange that, but hey, listen, people are doing a mannequin challenge these
days. I think that was some sort of initiation.
Oh, really, was it?
Yeah, I think that was what it was, yeah.
Fair enough. It's
a I don't know whether I'd do that. But...
Never know when you're older, mate. But right, so when Raul was scoring goals in the King of Madrid, many called the Bernabeu Giants Raul Madrid. Bayern Munich, their squad under Trapattoni were FC Hollywood. Now, player power is still rife, and Norwegian club Kongsvinger has taken this to a whole new extreme by appointing 34-year-old central defender Espen Neusten as their managing director. Now, to be fair, the club hasn't done too bad. Neusten appointed Portuguese manager Luis Pimenta, and he guided them to promotion from the third tier and are now in the playoffs for a return to the top division. Now, Mark, you spent some time in Norway, and we know their methods are, somewhat unorthodox. Does this come as a surprise to you, or did you notice any strange methods out there?
I think it comes as a surprise, Stal, that he's actually got the managing director's job. You know, one of the biggest jobs in the club, with him having to make the decisions on, like you say, the manager and things like that. So that's a bit of a shock to me. But I have seen, you know, in my time over there, how much they do put their trust in their players. A lot of the teams that I watched and worked with would have a lot of their first team players working as either assistant coaches for the first team or reserve team manager, or even the youth academy was always the first team players who would be the coaches. So, you know, they always give them that extra little bit of a role and responsibility in the club, and I think they just try and keep it all with the fact that what a club family, if you know what I mean, and they use the players as much as they can, and it also saves money for them because the salaries that they're paying these players is just, you know, they just add the coaching roles to the salary, and we know that, you know, it's not a massive financial gain over there with the league they're in, so anything that saves money like that is a good thing. So I've seen that happen on quite a few occasions with some of the Premier League teams as well in Norway. But yeah, the news of him becoming managing director is a bit of a shock. And I just don't know how that works. I don't know how he, as the player, can make the decisions on who's going to be the coaches and the managers. And, you know, if there's ever an argument in the locker rooms at half-time or after the game, like we see in a lot of the games, is... what decision does he make when he gets back in the office on a Monday morning? So it's quite scary, I think.
Yeah. The thing is, when you look at all these previous club captains, these absolute nutcases, you know, thinking, can you imagine if, say, Roy Keane was a managing director of United? Can you imagine if, I don't know, Julian Dix was the managing director of West Ham?
Vinnie Jones.
You know, Vinnie Jones, managing, well, mind you, Vinnie Jones can do whatever he wants anyway, so I'm not going to argue with him, to be fair. You know, it's incredible, but, you know, listen, it's a formula that seems to be working at the moment. They're close to winning promotion, so long may it continue.
They won the first leg, didn't they?
What's that?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you did your research. Blimey, well done. I mean, unless you put a bet.
I think like we say, we're on a different level when you're talking Norwegian soccer to anywhere else. It's, it really is a different level, and you don't experience that until you're out there and you're working with it. It's very much. I wouldn't say the standard is low Sunday League standard, but the whole organisation of it is just like not our Sunday leagues, as I say, but maybe our low Saturday league stuff, you know, a small non-league,
just
Premier League.
Conference or something like that.
The organisation is on a totally different scale there than it is anywhere else I've been in the world.
Fair point. Now you, there's a certain Sunday league competition that used to be, that used to compete in. I'm sure you've seen and heard some shenanigans. You know which Sunday league I'm talking about?
Talking the Great League?
Yeah.
You get maybe the chairman managing the Sunday league team and doing everything. You hear about these things. There's a lot of politics in Sunday league football as well, so it's not nothing unusual.
No,
by the
you can't divulge anything else. No, of course not. Well, we heard a little rumour, and I don't know how true this is. It was some time ago that a certain former Barnet manager, who used to be a Dutch international, no name is mentioned, was as I said, managing Barnet. And some match days, it came to an away game that all the players met at the ground, was meant to get on the coach, and he wasn't there. And the chairman called him up and said, "Where are you?" He was like, "Ah, you take the team. I can't be bothered this weekend." No surprise they got relegated. But yeah. And now to uncharted territory, well, for British football podcasts anyway. The Indian Super League, where Mumbai FC and Starman Diego Forlan lead the way on 22 points. Now, Travis, sorry to throw this at you, mate, but the Chinese Super League raised a lot of eyebrows in the summer as clubs shelled out millions on so-called marquee players. However, the Indian Super League has gone under the radar. If you look at the likes of Zico, Matarazzi, Zambrotta, Steve Coppell, they're all head coaches. Forlan, Postiga and Risa top the list of marquee players. Now, MLS clubs always used to sign 30-somethings when the league was formed. But why do you think there aren't... Well, there isn't any ISL coverage out here. Surely there's some interest in the league, no?
I don't know. It's, I mean, it seems a bit of a gimmick when I first heard about it. A bit like the Chinese league. I mean, one of the things... I saw this question, this question earlier, and I was kind of thinking about this in terms of... like, you know, why wouldn't I watch the Indian League? One of the things you consider as well is the time difference.
Yeah.
So these games will be on in the middle of the day.
They're at 1:30.
That's a fair point, yeah. I think they're like 5 hours ahead of us or something like that.
I know that Sky show the A-League, don't they?
That's right, yeah, the Chinese Super League or something like that. Oh, you mean the Australian League?
The A-League. That's right.
The Australian
League. Yeah, that's on Australian BT. Is it BT?
BT.
BT show, don't they? Yeah,
so BT now. It used to be on Sky, it's on BT now. But even with that, I've never really been interested in it, but even with that, you never really see the games because they're on sort of like at the times where you'd be at work or be going to work in the morning. So I think that might be one of the things, sort of like the time difference. And plus, like I said, it does just seem a bit like a gimmick at the moment. Like, I think once, if they sign someone, and you know, the thing with the MLS is that as much as, yes, they signed a load of 30-somethings, you started seeing people, maybe not the best players in each league or in European league, but you started seeing people that weren't past it going there. And that's when you kind of see people start taking an interest in it. And also when the league can start to import some of their own sort of like homegrown players, that's when you might start seeing some interest in it, because then it kind of gains a bit of credibility. But until then, I think you're going to struggle.
That's right. And Big Note says a lad from West Brom's under-21 moved on loan to India. Strange career move, hardly development. Well, he has a point. You know, it's not a developed league, but it's still a developing nation. And see, here's the thing. I mean, you can't, you know... rule them out or just be negative towards them because it's not a great league, or you know, they don't have super names or whatnot. You got to give them the credit for actually trying to develop, because let's be honest, you know, India are never going to qualify for a World Cup, not in my lifetime anyway. But this has got to be good for the people. I mean, they're big football fans. We know that a lot of Premier League teams, you know, market their brand in Asia, you know, so I just wish him all the best, to be honest, and I hope that something good comes from that. But anyway, that is pretty much it for our show this evening. Guys, thank you ever so much for agreeing to appear on the show. Mark, do you want to give our listeners your Twitter handle?
Yeah, it's Meza0102.
Trav?
Ntrav99.
And what's yours?
Yannickis Joanna.
You sure?
I think so.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I'll tweet you anyway. Right, before we go, I'd just like to check out www.ball-launcher.com or the Twitter page Ball Launcher, which is at Technovate. Now, the videos on the site show what this little beast is capable of. It's really compelling stuff, and I think it can really, really make a difference from a coaching perspective. So check it out, ball-launcher.com. Just like to also thank the FNX Network at FNX Network and My Sportswear at My Sportswear One. Give us a follow on Twitter at Shoot the Defence. We have a Facebook group page, and yeah, it's been great having you guys on, and look forward to having you back on the show again.
Thanks for having me.
Brilliant. Until next time, take care.